This hour is being brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
With 16 seconds to go, Highsmith over the timeline. They're just going to dribble it out. The Miami Heat advance and will take on the Boston Celtics on Sunday in the opening game of a best of seven, with the 8-seed Heat taking on the number one seed, the 62-win Boston Celtics. Ball game over. Miami 112, Bulls 91. Season is over for the Chicago Bulls. The second straight season in a play-in game, Miami has eliminated the Chicago Bulls.
Ugly stuff on South Beach on Friday. It had nothing to do with spring breakers. It was all about the Bulls being bad in Miami, losing that game, being eliminated from playoff contention, and doing it in embarrassing fashion. What changes might take place? What changes are even possible? We're going to discuss that now with our guy, Cody Westerlund, who covers the Bulls for us here at 670 The Score. He's joining us on the Circus Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today. Bernstein and Holmes, Lawrence and Layla here with you until 2 o'clock. Hey, Cody.
How are you today?
I mean, we're good. I think my biggest takeaway from what we saw wasn't just that loss in Miami. That was just the period at the end of the sentence. For me, it was what was said afterward by not just Arturis Karnišovas on Saturday, but really Billy Donovan and DeMar DeRozan in the postgame coverage and their press conferences after the game on Friday. Where do you sit with all of this? And I'll start big, and then we can funnel down to the nitty-gritty on what you think the Bulls' reaction was and where they go from here based after the game on Friday.
Yeah, you know, I think DeMar and Billy's comments were probably rooted in frustration, right? Like DeMar talking about how he certainly wants to win. That's still a priority. And whatever level the Bulls ascended to this year in the play-in and the last play-in game, that was not it. Not how he wants to be finishing his career, wherever he may finish that. And then you go to AK on Saturday, like, look, this is the first time he came out and publicly admitted pretty much that the group he put together doesn't work. It was markedly different from his trade deadline press conference, where he talked about continuity, wanting these guys to give one more run, where he struck an optimistic tone, even though I think they were 24 and 27 on the trade deadline day, where he didn't do anything. So to me, certainly a change of tone from AK, and I thought that was a really big deal. I don't put a great deal of stock, I don't feel like, into anything Billy and DeMar said as some big picture item. I think they were probably both, disappointed in how the season ended, and understanding that, like we said, that wasn't it, and AK a day later said that himself.
You and Joe in the press conference were pressing about what types of changes can happen. From a cap standpoint, what can the Bulls do?
Well, they can trade Zach LaVine. That would be the big one, right? Making around $45 million a year on his five-year deal that he originally signed. He's got three of those years left. That's the big one. Lonzo Ball, if they were to apply for a career-ending injury provision and had an independent medical panel decide that that indeed was the case for his health outlook moving forward, would get $21 million off the books for next year. So those are the two big ones. And you talk about, like, look, they could not re-sign DeMar DeRozan, or they could sign and trade him and have him not be here, and that would take salary off the books as well. That just feels like far less likely than the Zach LaVine trade, because that's what the Bulls want to do. And then the Lonzo Ball situation, which is just simply a reality of his health in this situation. So to me, it's Lonzo and Zach are the two main ways to get salary cap relief. And really, we're talking about luxury tax relief, right? So the Bulls were low $160 million range this year in their salary cap sheet, and that was just under the luxury tax. If they re-signed DeMar and Patrick Williams, that would take them above it. If they added someone on a mid-level exception, that would take them above it, unless they move Zach, unless they get rid of Lonzo. And look, AK said everything's on the table. I thought, from his perspective on Saturday, I thought he struck a good note on saying changes needed, vowing to make changes, but understanding he couldn't give a lot of specifics and be like, yeah, you know, we want to trade Zach here or there. This is what we want to do exactly, because then that can put him in a more difficult position. So I thought he struck a nice balance the other day in admitting change was needed. And that's why we're talking about the changes we can make, or the Bulls can make, because we can talk about them more specifically.
There wasn't anything that stuck out to me that was glaring about what we've seen out of the Bulls. It just looked like what happened when they were having an off night. Like, that game that we saw wasn't that uncharacteristic to me, given what we've seen out of this team this season when they've had some clunkers. What did you think about the actual game?
Well, it was just completely different from when the Bulls clobbered the Hawks two nights before. And look, the Bulls shot 38% against the Heat in their loss. And the Heat sent a ton of attention at DeMar DeRozan and a ton of attention at Kobe White. DeMar, being who he is, handled it a little bit better. Still had an efficient game. I think, 22 points on 8 of 16 field goals or so was late in the game. Kobe did not shoot the ball well, did not score. Ayo Dosunmu really struggled too. So that's part of the learning curve in the process, right? When you go up against a really good defense. And I was on Friday with you guys, and toward the end, I think I made the note, like, the one good unit on the floor on Friday was going to be Miami's defense, no matter what. It felt like the Bulls should have played way better. They had some advantages with Jimmy Butler being out, but the one good unit took control of that game in the Heat's defense. Got them a lot of easy buckets late in the third quarter. I think a three-minute stretch, the Bulls had like 5 or 6 turnovers in the third quarter. They were just chucking the ball all over the floor. Some of that had to do with bad decisions by the Bulls. Some of it had to do with the Heat forcing them into those turnovers. So that's what happened. That's why the Bulls need more firepower. The Bulls would really like that to have been Zach LaVine, but he has not been healthy, has not fit in various regards. That's why they're trying to trade him. But whoever it is next year, they do need to get a little bit more firepower in that. And then Kobe and Ayo need to take the next step, be more consistent against elite defenses, right? Like, we've seen these guys string together consistent games in the regular season against good teams, bad teams, average teams. It is a different setting with the game plan in a playoff setting against one of the best coaches in the NBA. So they'll have to certainly keep their progression going for the Bulls to overcome that.
Yeah, and I think the turnovers was really what I was hinting at when it came to just poor performance we've seen before against lower level opponents, frankly. And to see that against this Heat team, it didn't come as a shock. I don't know. We talk about Zach LaVine as far as the biggest piece of it monetarily.
Yeah.
But details-wise, or at least ball-wise, what do you think is going to make the biggest difference for this team on the court, knowing that they're going to still have a lot of these pieces in place, potentially?
Yeah, more three-point shooting. And look, if they had Zach, they would have had more of that. The Bulls just... They are lagging behind the current trends in the NBA, even though they signed Javon Carter and Torrey Craig to give them more three-point shooting. The Javon Carter signing did not work out whatsoever in year one. So that's something that, look, if Zach's not here, maybe a few more guard minutes open up, depending on what the other end of that transaction is, depending on how the Bulls use a draft pick and such. So I just think they need to have more stylistic versatility. Part of that is more three-point shooting. Part of that's playing less at times through DeMar in the high post, or just Vooch in the pick and roll with getting the ball in the pocket to him. I do think they would benefit from that on both ends. Defensively, they had two centers in Vooch and Andre Drummond who played a lot alike in the sense that being in drop defense was more comfortable for them. They weren't a group that wanted to go out there and trap pick and roll ball handlers or anything like that. So Bulls need to focus on that. And look, they need to trade Zach to get this rolling. They really do. And I think the biggest part of AK's press conference on Saturday was when he's vowing to make these changes, a lot of us were talking about they might not be able to trade Zach until teams see him take the floor early next season to prove his health. Now it feels like AK is so dead set on that the Bulls' price will be less than what I thought it was before, which would make a trade of Zach more likely in the offseason, June, around the NBA draft, or July when free agency opens. So to me, that was kind of the big takeaway, was the Bulls realizing this doesn't just need to change. It seems like they understand it needs to change now. And for them, that would be moving Zach LaVine.
I found myself frustrated watching the game on Friday because I'm watching Jaime Jaquez go out there and do work. He is yet another example of Heat culture. He's another one of these guys that is fine enough college player at UCLA, yet you get there and you're able to start a playing game. You know, the same thing with Max Strus, who was a Bull for a while. He gets to Miami and gets $80 million in a contract. Like, I'm so jealous of what they've got going. One, they got Spoelstra, who can coach his way out of certain problems. But just organizationally, do you think the Bulls are even moving close to having that type of success from a player development standpoint? They're going to be able to find guys in the middle or at the bottom of the first round that they can turn into players.
That's maybe not loaded question, but we got to walk through it here, right? Like, my mind goes to Dalen Terry.
It's a totally loaded question, Cody. I'm going to let you off the hook because I'm thinking about Dalen Terry because they were both picked 18th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, look, Io worked out in the second round. He's been amazing, right? So there's one success story. You can't deny Kobe's development. A lot of it came in year five for him. He's the 7th overall pick in a draft, probably a little higher than what you're talking about, certainly mid-lottery or late-lottery, mid-teens, stuff like that. So I have serious questions like you do, serious concerns, having seen the Dalen Terry situation. He does not feel very close to me to contributing at a high level, right? Not to say he won't be in the rotation next year, not to say he can't contribute, but that shot needs so much work for Dalen Terry. He provided a little bit by way of ball handling. You had to like him going to the hole a little bit harder late in the year and having some nice finishes, but a lot of work there to like be a component in the pick and roll game, anything like that. So no, I don't think the Bulls are anywhere near as close to the Heat are. And like you said, Jaime Jaquez goes in there and doesn't start the playing game against the 76ers, but scores 21 points and takes Jimmy Butler's spot against the Bulls and makes some big plays for them, a really tough-nosed player in Miami. So that's certainly something that needs to change for the Bulls. And as I think about it here on the fly, they need a lot more work in that regard. Like, they got to hit these picks that they have out of the park when they have them, right? They didn't have a first round pick in 2021 or 2023 because of the Vooch trade. They are not tracking to have a pick in 2025, the Bulls, because they owe it to the Spurs, top 10 protected. Now, if they're really bad next year, they could keep it. Maybe that changes in a good draft and the season goes sideways for them, but they need an influx of young talent, and they've had a little bit with Kobe and Io, but they haven't done enough with the rest of the players they have.
Well, and I know this draft is considered not great. So when it comes to some of the capital that maybe they were offered potentially at the trade deadline, maybe one of the reasons they did sit was because first rounders aren't as valuable as they will be next year.
Yeah, the 2025 draft obviously is loaded with Cooper Flagg being the headliner there. Everyone's belief in this 2024 draft is that there's just no star power. So it's like the one draft that teams probably wouldn't be really sad if they didn't like hop into the lottery and get the 3, 4, 5 pick. I mean, that's always helpful, but it seems to me like you're picking from a pool of players who might be more similar at number 4 and number 9, for example, than they usually would be in other situations. So for the Bulls, they're currently lined up to have the 11th pick, I believe 2% chance to jump to number 1 overall, 9.4% chance to jump into the top 4 of this draft. The likelihood is they'll sit there at number 11. And I think you look at a player like, look, if you want to compete next year, I think it would be worthwhile for them to go with someone who's a little bit more proven, right? Now, if you want to turn it over and rebuild a little bit, then you take flyers on someone who's younger. But Dalton Connect, the really good wing from Tennessee who can shoot it, he's a guy that's projected to go top 10 or late in the lottery. Like, that's a guy that will be there. If you're going to re-sign DeMar, you're going to re-sign Vooch, you're going to go out and trade for maybe not so much win now players, but just contributors immediately in a Zach LaVine trade if you get something back. And look, that's another loaded question, Lawrence. If you want to talk about loaded questions, what could the Bulls possibly get back in a Zach LaVine trade? Because they might have to get off a player too to attach, but they'll probably have someone coming back their way in that deal. Like, you look at all of that and take it in. If DeMar's back, they're trying to win in some manner. There's some floor there they want to accomplish. Then it makes a little bit more sense, I feel like, to add a player who could contribute next year. But you gotta weigh everything, right? Like, this isn't a team close enough to the title, or certainly a team close enough to the bottom at this moment. They've been in the middle forever. You got to just take whoever's the best player, I think, for your future. But the Bulls have to know what they want to do in that future. And I feel like that's what AK is trying to decide over the next few weeks and few months.
Cody, thanks for joining us. Watch this be the year that they get draft luck. Because
they got draft luck with Pat Williams and had the chance at Tyrese Haliburton. So you can't say the Bulls didn't have the draft luck opportunity.
Yeah,
they've had a couple times.
We got to do a deep dive on that decision by itself.
We could do a segment sometime. How many problems Tyrese Haliburton being in Chicago would have solved for the Bulls moving forward? You're looking at a lot of decisions later that cost them that they probably wouldn't have made.
Man, it's not just that. It's also how they fell in love with Patrick Williams and like how that thought process changed. And then there's other things like how Tyrese Haliburton loved when CM Punk came back.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't even talk about that.
I mean,
he fits on many levels.
I know that Goff was high on Haliburton before that draft. And I was like, I was like, let me go take a closer look. And then when the Bulls passed him, I was like, all right, well, this is interesting. And
they
then
really liked Williams. He wowed him in workouts. Like Casey kept saying, he was surprised.
Put Jason Goff in the scouting department. That's what I say.
Cody, that would be incredible entertainment. I'm all for it.
I'd watch that behind the scenes. No doubt about it.
We all would.
Cody, be well, man. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks again.
Yep. Take care.
Thanks, Cody.
Cody Westerlund of our staff breaking it all down.
Now we get to good Caleb Williams stuff.
Yeah, Caleb Williams was on the Pivot podcast, and there was some interesting stuff that he shared about himself. Some stuff that got misconstrued, too.
What?
Some stuff that people attached to meaning one thing when it actually kind of meant something else.
What? They took him out of context?
Yeah.
I am shocked.
That happened. We will discuss next on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Be yourself. Don't try to do it all over the night and just stay humble. Don't try to do it all by yourself. You got a great group of guys around you. I know you've seen the pieces, Keenan Allen, Swift from Philly.
Yes,
we got some. We got some guys that around him. So I could just be humble and be yourself. So I mean, he's obviously a talented guy. I would just say, just don't try to do it all in one night.
And while I love that, is his natural self being humble?
I don't think so, and I think that's okay. I don't think so at all.
I just want to.
Montez Sweat on the Greenlight podcast talking about Caleb Williams and how he can make all of this work as he moves from a college locker room to a professional one. That wasn't the only podcast that needs to be discussed when it comes to Caleb Williams. Caleb was on the Pivot podcast, which is really great. I love the stuff that they're doing over there. I wonder, AB was teammates with Channing Crowder, right? I think I have that right. And Fred Taylor.
I don't know off the top of my head.
He needs to be on that podcast with them so they can tell stories and whatnot.
Has anybody really talked to AB since Justin Fields got traded to Pittsburgh?
I'm going to talk to him this week because I'm going to be hosting some of our draft coverage on NBC Sports Chicago, as will you. You're going to be a part of the draft coverage on NBC Sports Chicago.
Oh, yeah. I said I would appear. I'm at NBC 5, of course.
Yeah.
Mike Berman's in Detroit. But, yeah, I said I'd be part of the Zoom conversation.
Yeah, you're going to be
it's
a
like
part of it.
It's like 7 to 9 on Thursday night.
Yeah, we're going to kick it.
Yeah. I can do that. Yeah, I can discuss some things.
It's going to be a good time. But back to Caleb. This is what he told the Pivot podcast on how frustrated he was. If you want to try to get a glimpse of who he is as a competitor, how frustrated he was to not start at Oklahoma.
The most recent one was Oklahoma when I didn't start. That one was real tough for me.
When you made a decision to go to Oklahoma and Spencer Rattler was already there?
Yeah.
And that was, at the time, mm-hmm. when you made a decision to go to Oklahoma,
yeah.
Spencer Rattler was a projected first round pick
yeah.
the next year.
Yeah.
You had to pivot because they decided to start the guy that was supposed to be a first round pick that year, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Why'd you choose to go there then?
Development.
So you thought that...
I'd known that Lincoln was the best in the country.
So why did it hurt you, though, that the incumbents...
Because I was the best in the country.
Explain that to me. You make a decision to go to the school that has a starter that's coming back, that's supposed to be a first-round pick.
I told many people before I went there, and there's a backstory to it also, why I was so fired up. I told people before I went there that I was gonna start and play and beat him out. I thought I'd beat him out in spring, and he was projected number one and all of that. So he started for six games, and so I prepared. I kept preparing. Lincoln told me keep going. It's something that I didn't understand. Those two words I did not understand when he told me, because I wasn't asking him. I wasn't coming to him to beg for playing time. I never came to him. I came to him and asked him, how do I do it? How do I beat this dude out? Because he never let me get reps with the first team. He never let me get reps with, the older guys and things like that. So I took advantage of my reps. I got after it, I put my head down. And at a certain point, I felt like, I beat him out. And I got to, at some point, and I went up and asked Link again. I said, how do I do it? How do I beat him out? What can I do to put myself in a position that I believe that I should be in and want to be in and trying to get to? And so he told me, keep going. He didn't give me any other advice. So that's his words that he told me. And at the time, I was so angry, so frustrated, because I didn't feel like that wasn't what I wanted to hear, because I felt like I was the best. I felt like I could have helped us win, all the games, getting more reps, getting later in the season, and I'm ready for those moments, later in the season. So I didn't get those reps. I kept preparing as best that I could. So when I had my moment, there was no way that he was ever going to get it back. So it goes back to I watched and learned Tom Brady.
Yeah.
For Drew Bledsoe is when you prepare. When you get your moment, because you never know how long it's going to be, you never know what's going to happen. When you get your moment, you don't give it back. And so that was my mindset and plan. And I went there saying that I was going to beat him out. And I feel as if I did. It didn't happen. So I had to pivot. I had to change. I had to keep going and adjust to what the position I was in. Be the same person every day. But when I got my shot,
yeah,
nothing else was going to happen other than me being the guy.
Shout out to Ryan Clark for pushing. I really enjoyed him pushing Caleb on that, saying, this is what you chose. And just so that we can kind of square the circle, to have a little fun with who's your guy, and this is the beauty of having the beast at the ready
can
when you
still
need
control
it.
F.
That's true. Spencer Rattler. Okay, now Ryan's right. Spencer Rattler was a guy that people had projected to be in the Heisman race.
Yes.
That season. Now, he has since transferred to South Carolina, and he's been pretty good. Just give you a couple lines on him. Aesthetically pleasing passer with his fluid release. Oh, wait, Studs, get a couple of drops ready real quick. We'll do an impromptu version of Who's Your Guy with Spencer Rattler.
Wait, hold on. Mythical guy is Spencer Rattler.
Spencer Rattler, 6 feet.
Are you sure about that?
No. But they say he's you
there's
talk about
a lot of guys auspiciously listed in this draft as 6'1"
Look, he legit is just his is 6'0002.
Hey, you're all taller than me.
6 feet. Strength.
This guy is so cool. He wears a bandana and he dances and he can't really tackle.
Aesthetically pleasing passer with his fluid release and impressive arm talent. Throws from wide balance base and delivers with confidence from any platform. can get the ball out with zip to access small windows, keeps his vision downfield with patience to allow routes to develop, trusts his anticipation to deliver before receivers are out of their breaks, loves to push the ball down the field, would run for verts every other play if he could.
Yeah.
Weaknesses.
And he doesn't look the part. I've said it before, he looks like a kind of a tall pudge kind of guy out there with no real muscle definition, so to speak. He doesn't look athletic. He doesn't sprint.
How did you find this?
His pocket movements and field reads are too systematic. Decision-making isn't a glaring issue, but his 2023 tape still showed some misreads and immature mistakes that you want to see, that you don't want to see. Can get reckless with the football, combined 20 interceptions and 14 fumbles over his two seasons at South Carolina. Summary. Overall, Rattler has methodical play style and needs to be more urgent in his movement reads, but he has the arm talent, self-confidence, and work habits that give him a fighting chance to work his way up an NFL depth chart. He offers upside at the position, but the interview process will be crucial to his draft grades. He is projected as the 72nd pick in this year's draft. So that's who Caleb is talking about.
I also think that those traits that we discussed, like the what they liked about him on a video, his throwing style, that is something that developed early with him.
Yep.
That's what got people talking.
So here you have Caleb at Oklahoma. He follows Lincoln Riley out to LA at USC. This is the thing that got misconstrued. People clip this without context where it sounds like Caleb is saying that he's better than the other quarterbacks. Now, I have no doubt in my mind that Caleb thinks that he's better than the other quarterbacks, as he should.
Right.
As he should. But this was more of him explaining what he does, whether it's inside the pocket or outside the pocket.
It was showing that you could throw.
It was going back to the trolling kind of
smart-ass
me, because everybody wants to. If you go look at the stats, and I have a screenshot of it. If you go look at the stats, and on average, I am the most dead center even dude for scrambling and throwing in the pocket. It's just, I make more highlights, and so that's what they show. But dead even stat of scramble to pocket, I am the most dead even on the farthest end of the spectrum from anybody else. As we know, X and Y axis, I am the farthest from all of them in every single way. And so to all of the people, I can do anything and everything as I want and as my team needs and whatever it takes to win a game. And so that's that.
So what he's saying in a very confident way is basically, I did as much from the pocket as I did on the run. The reason people think that I'm doing it more on the run is because that's where the big highlights come from. Mm-hmm. He's very confident.
I also just detect a guy who feels like he's had to prove himself for reasons that are many.
The great ones always have that chip, though, right?
But also, like, people have challenged him, and he's like, no, okay. He's coming from a place of, oh, well, why are you so great? And he's got to explain himself.
Yeah. He feels like there is a little bit of, I have to defend my resume a little bit.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you know who I am? There's a little bit of that in there.
I mean, I don't know if it's even necessarily, do you know who I am? But it's like, it's just, I think it's what comes with being highly scrutinized as a person who's not in the NFL yet.
Yep. Here's what I've done, and here's what I've done, but here's how I can back up what I just said. I'm not just saying it. There are actual statistics to back up what I'm saying.
And Ryan Clark did he did the reflective discussion where he's just summarizing what he did. Clark is just summarizing what Williams did. If this was a decision you made, this was the actions you took. And you hope it's not going to hurt him later. You know, like that could be a difficult place to dig yourself out of in this city.
No doubt. I always like when the guys that have done it, like the guys that have played for a while, Ryan Clark has a Super Bowl ring. Those type of guys get to ask questions because the way that he can take, journalistically, he can take some liberties with Caleb that maybe I can't.
Right.
Like if I were to push him in the same way, or if you were, it might come off a little different. But with Ryan being like, I know how the game is played when it comes to recruitment. You chose to go to a place where there was a dude who was already
in front of you.
Right. And he was good. So why are you surprised that you didn't get to run with the ones? They had already had a plan in place. Like, I appreciate him pushing a little bit. The whole thing is wonderful. You should check out the entire Pivot podcast if you want to get to know Caleb Williams a little bit better.
And to me, if you really want to get into it, listen to that discussion and then put it right next to the one he had with Tim Anderson.
Yeah, I agree.
I appreciate the ability to have conversation and relate to people.
It's true. What are we doing in the next segment?
Okay, so a young fan over the weekend made a great catch in the stands, and he got to talk with Elise Menaker about it.
All right, I like that idea.
This is good.
That is wholesome. Let's do that next here on The Score.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
It's always nice when there's great fan interaction and when you see cool stuff happen on cool plays like this one.
Here comes the 1-2 to Arise. Lifted foul down the left field line. I'm calling it foul as that ball slices up into the stands. It did turn out foul. I almost called that prematurely.
Nice play by a young fan on the very first row in foul territory. Young guy brought his glove, and that was a good decision today as he makes a catch. He will never forget that.
Mm-hmm. Kind of shaking his hand.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
That is a happy young guy right there.
He is in a different world right yeah. now. Fantasy land. Here's the 1-2, a chopper foul right side.
It's awesome.
It's a different world from where you come from. Then what happened, and that's highlighted courtesy of Marquee, he got the opportunity to talk with Elise Menaker about it.
You know, Anthony, I always ask the players, like, take me through that play. So what did you see off the bat?
So I heard the crack of the bat. Sorry. And I'm just looking up. I'm like, tracking the ball down, and then I see it coming closer and closer, and then I see somebody grab up, and I just put my hand behind it, and it was kind of like a coach throwing the ball at you in practice. So I'm just like, give me, and I got it.
So when you catch it, you take us through your reaction too, because you're so excited.
So I caught it, and I'm like, oh my God, there's no way I just caught that. And then I'm yelling, I'm a Gold Glover, I'm a Gold Glover. And then people were telling me, look up, and I look up and I see me. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm a Gold Glover, just pounding my chest.
You have to get some gold for that glove. You have to tell me, you are now a lifelong Cubs fan, in part because you caught this ball, but also explain the history. You live in Milwaukee, but you changed to a Cubs fan because?
Because of Craig Council, and also, because my family, and also during that 2016 World Series run, everyone in my family is just like, oh yeah, Rizzo, you have the same first name as Anthony Rizzo. I'm like, oh yeah.
That kid's awesome.
He was so descriptive.
Anthony Poremba.
By the way, someone told Council
that
after the game.
He switched teams because of Craig Council.
And he was like, that's super cool. So shout out to him. Congratulations all around. Well done all the way around.
I love a good fielding crowd. Makes life interesting.
By the way, speaking of Cubs, join The Score in Budweiser on Thursday, May 2nd at Harry Carey's Tavern, Navy Pier, for the 26th annual worldwide toast to Harry Carey. Parkins and Spiegel will be there broadcasting live from 4 to 7 with actor and comedian Jason Alexander, leading the toast at 5:30, yada, yada, yada. You'll also have a chance to register to win tickets to your future Cubs home game. The Worldwide Toast to Harry Carey is brought to you by Budweiser. This Bud's for you.
I mentioned the bisque.
The bisque?
That's
the Harry
the
Carey?
Line.
Oh, that's right. See, I'm lost in my own head.
There's so many you could come up with. So
it's
many.
True. Are you back Wednesday?
Yes.
Sweet. But I know that you've got draft meetings and everything else and whatnot.
Yeah, but we have our plan, you know. We're sending Mike.
Yeah, but you're the lead sports anchor, so you got lots of stuff to do. I'm saying because
I just have a 2:30 meeting I have
right.
to be in every
day. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm yeah. letting people know that that's why they will not hear you during transition. But thanks for hanging out today. I much appreciate it.
I appreciate it, too. Sometimes I push it. I'm like, I can go to 2:10, and then it's like, you were late for the meeting. I'm like,
yeah. Yeah, don't be late to this meeting. Parkinson's.
I think I can speed walk faster than I really can. Yep, that's how I look silly.
That's what you're supposed to do.
That's me.
You will see Layla on NBC5 tonight at 5, 6, and 10.
Possibly 4, and also on the morning show. If you ever do that, we do that too.
And you will hear her back on the Score airwaves Wednesday, 10 to 2.
And then next Monday.
For sure.
For you.
Yeah, I'm having my colonoscopy.
Oh, that's yeah. what's happening.
Yep.
Ugh.
Yeah, it happens. Get one
important,
every year.
Important to do.
Very important. People around my age should get it anyway. I have Crohn's, so I have to get it every year.
I think people should get it starting at 35. That's just me.
They recommend 45-ish.
They do, but family has.
But if you have stuff going on, you should definitely talk with your gastro and maybe get it done sooner.
Yeah.
And it's not that scary, and it's a great test because it's diagnostic, but it also helps because if they see a polyp, they can just go boop. And they can pull the polyp out in the middle of the exam.
And you know
that's the whole bit.
That's much easier than having to suffer from something worse later.
Correct.
That's way more expensive and time-consuming and awful.
So if you're in the age range, go get it. Or if your doctor suggests it, go get it. And I'll tell you about my experience when I get back on Tuesday. Parkinson's Spiegel are next on The Score. Fair.